And now the game in which people crown a lifetime of achievement with 10 minutes of pointlessness. We call it Not My Job.
You didn't tell me it was going to be 10 minutes, for God's sake. I thought this was going to be over in about three.
This isn't television. We have a longer attention span, okay?
You mean people pay $20 a head for lousy jokes like that?
Exactly.
Well, they didn't know it ahead of time.
Yeah, no, it's another 35 to get out.
Now, you may remember a certain late-night TV fixture named Ted Koppel. For more than 25 years, he held his own against Carson, Letterman, Leno. Mr. Koppel recently joined NPR as a senior news analyst, and we are delighted to have him with us today. Ted Koppel, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about Nightline, the show you hosted for 25
years. Oh, we're not going to the quiz yet.
We're not going to the quiz yet. No, this is the chatting part.
Oh, thank God,
part.
I can relax.
Yeah,
right,
no. Let the tension flow. This is all right. Nightline. Of course, Nightline began in the late 70s in the hostage crisis in Iran. It began as a special bulletin every night. It became a regular feature. And, of course, became, you know, in the middle of late-night TV, a very serious news program.
Wait a second. I know this one.
All right, go ahead. What is it?
Nightline.
Yes, very good.
Yes.
Could you do that today? I mean, has...
Could I do... What, I mean, you mean, would such a program make
yes.
it on the air?
Yes.
Not unless it involves some very buxom, blonde, former Hollywood star.
You don't think so?
And I'm unavailable.
It's a shame. I mean, of course, there was the famous incident in which the show, while you were still hosting it, this is about 4 or 5 years ago now, was almost canceled because they were offering your time slot to David Letterman.
They did, and I owe the last 4 years of my life at ABC to David turning it all down for more money at CBS.
Bless his avaricious heart. You were known as being a very direct interviewer. You weren't the kind of person who went out of his way to be chummy.
Well, that was then, this is now.
Yeah, I know, thank God, because I don't know if I could withstand it. I remember, for example, your famous interview with Mike Dukakis in the midst of the 1988 presidential campaign, in which you told him that he just doesn't get it. Did you ever, I know you felt the need to do that professionally. Did you ever feel bad about it afterwards? Did you think, I was kind of mean to him?
I actually felt bad about it at the time, because I thought that he was going to really sort of rear up and take charge and say, what do you mean, I don't get it? You know, I'm running for president of the United States, and you insolent young snot. But he didn't. He just, he's a very, very polite man, and I guess that's not what we want as president of the United States.
Yeah. You saved us all, I guess.
Ted, was there anybody you wanted to interview that you never got?
I really did want to interview the Pope. Any Pope. I'm not particular. You know what I mean?
Give him a Pope. Any Pope.
And that has never happened. But no, for the most part, I've gotten to interview just about everybody I ever did want to interview.
Really? Nobody? I mean, nobody saw you coming and said, no way am I talking to that guy.
Well, these days they say it all the time, but back then they didn't know who I was.
That's because of the power of NPR. It's
exactly.
Where you're working now.
Yes.
Now, one of the things that...
You say that in jest, actually, but the power of NPR is going to be quite extraordinary. I've watched it evolve over the last 10 years, and if you'd said that 10 years ago, it would have been true. These days, pay attention to all the people who are now coming on to be interviewed on NPR, because it is the place to be.
I'm telling you, the microchip is working.
I know. It's
only been installed for a little while.
I wanted to ask you this. One thing I didn't know about you until relatively recently is that you, in fact, grew up, at least for 13 years, in England.
I did.
You're actually an Englishman by birth.
I did. I am, yes.
Right. And I'm told, I even saw you do it once, you can do an astonishingly good British accent.
I'll tell you what. I will combine two aspects. I'll tell you about my first week in high school in New York City in 1953. I was 13 years old. I'll save you the math. 67 is the answer. And I was sitting in study hall, and there was absolute silence, and I raised my hand, and I said, please, sir, does anyone here have a rubber? Now, some of you will be old enough to remember General Patton's famous line about, the British and the Americans are two nations separated by a common language.
Yes.
In English, I mean, in England, a rubber is an eraser.
Right.
Here, of course, it is something totally different.
Something you wear over your shoes.
Something
right.
You wear over your head when you are 13 years old and you make a stupid comment like that in class.
But one of the things I'm curious about is, obviously, you don't speak that way anymore.
I don't have to.
I know. But given that you have one of the great television news voices, your diction, your locution, your pace, and given that you did not, at least initially, speak that way, did you, in fact, learn to speak in the sonorous tones of a premier-level TV newsman?
Yeah, wake me up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I sound just like you.
But I want to ask you about the other work you're doing now, which is for the Discovery Channel, where you are, if I'm not mistaken, the managing editor.
I am.
Now, what does that mean? Does that mean you have to approve every episode of Meerkat Manor?
No. That's on Animal Planet, you turkey.
So what do you do for them?
I do about 6 documentaries a year for them, and the title was, you know, we finally got to the point where we were arguing about money, and I said, all right, well, just give me a title.
Oh,
that's
really?
Where a lot of titles come from. That's how the Commander guy got it.
Yeah.
Ted Koppel, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
It stars Matthew McConaughey. How could it fail?
Not many people noticed it at the time, but the 2005 movie Sahara, starring the aforesaid Mr. McConaughey, was actually one of the biggest flops in Hollywood history.
Really?
It was.
How big a flop was it?
It was so big that we have 3 questions to ask you about it.
About that movie?
Exactly.
Which I've never seen or heard of.
There you are.
I should do brilliantly on this.
I think so. Trust your feelings, Padawan. The Los Angeles Times recently got a hold of financial documents that detail exactly how this adventure movie managed to lose more than $100 million.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's great.
That's something. We're going to ask you 3 questions about the making of Sahara. Get 2 right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their home answering machine, or if they prefer, a DVD of Sahara, their call. Carl, who is legendary news guy Ted Koppel playing for?
Ted is playing for Jackson Holtz of Everett, Washington.
All right. Ready to play?
I thought Jackson Holtz was in Wyoming.
All right. Here we go. First question. One reason the movie lost money is that the producers spent so much of it, including which of these line items in their budget? A, $36,000 for a private plane to fly in Penelope Cruz's dog. B, $1.8 million to import a more attractive kind of sand to a location in the Moroccan desert, or C, more than $237,000 to bribe local officials in Morocco.
Oh, you couldn't get the local officials that cheap. Listen, I mean, the most ridiculous one is obviously bringing in the $1.8 million worth of sand, so I'm going with that.
You are. No, it was actually the bribes.
The bribes?
Yeah, apparently you can still get a bargain in certain small villages.
Oh, well, that's lovely.
These expenditures are listed in the budget as, quote, courtesy payments, quote, gratuities, and, quote, local bribes. All right, you have 2 more questions. Here's your next one. Most of the money went to actually shooting the film. For example, there's a scene involving the hero, Matthew McConaughey, driving a Jeep. The director wanted to cut that scene from the film, but he could not. Why? A, Matthew McConaughey was very proud of his stunt driving and insisted that it be in the film. B, Chrysler had paid $3 million for the Jeep to appear in the movie. Or C, they needed the noise of the Jeep to cover up McConaughey's pathetic attempts to speak Arabic.
Well, I'll say that Chrysler paid $3 million.
They did. They did.
Oh, good. Yeah. I've got it. Jackson and I have a fighting chance. I want you to know, Jackson, if this doesn't work out, I'll get Sam Donaldson to come to your house.
I'm sorry, is that an offer or a threat?
Yeah.
Well, actually, Sam is one of my oldest and dearest friends, and the joke about Sam is that if they hadn't invented television, Sam would have gone door to door.
Last question. Here you go. This is for all the marbles. Everybody knows that the lingo of film production with its best boys and gaffers is hard to decipher. Well, this production spent almost $39,000 for a gully sucker. What, Ted Koppel, is a gully sucker? Is it A, a euphemism in the film industry for a location girlfriend for the producer, director, or star?
You would kind of like that to be true, wouldn't you?
As Hemingway once said, isn't it pretty to think so? B, it's a machine used to suck waste out of gullies. Or C, it's a makeup person whose sole job is to sponge perspiration off the faces of the stars during action scenes.
Hey, Jackson, I think we got this one made. It's number three.
It's number three. You think it's the makeup person whose job is?
It's definitely the makeup person.
Did you have a person like that when you were on set?
I am constantly attended by a gully sucker.
Well, I hope you have a large living space, because actually the answer was B. It's a machine used to suck waste out of gullies. I mean, how else do you get your waste out of your gully without a gully sucker?
You're making that up.
I am not.
No. So now that you've used me and mocked me, you're just going to discard me, aren't you?
It's terrible. Carl, how did Ted Koppel do in our quiz?
Well, Ted needed at least two correct answers to win for Jackson, but he only had one correct answer. So I guess Jackson gets a visit from Sam Donaldson. Huh?
No.
I still think you made that damn thing up.
No, I didn't, really.
There's no such thing as a gully. How much did they spend on the gully
circuit? They spent $39,000 to get one of these items.
Well, it's reasonable.
Yeah, I know. That's actually not a bad price for a gully sucker.
With the $500 rebate, I mean, it's a hell of a deal.
Ted Koppel is a senior news analyst for NPR, and of course he redefined TV news with ABC's Nightline for more than two decades. His documentary, Living with Cancer, airs Sunday on the Discovery Channel. He has won 41 Emmy Awards, 8 Peabody's, 10 DuPont Columbia Awards, although he has yet to win. Carl Castle's voice on the home answering machine. The listener of the show, we hope, though, that you will come back and try again. Ted Koppel, thank you so much for being with us today.
It was a great pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye-bye.